they already see the writing on the wall that, you know, yes, there's existing supply and competition in the market, but it's not going to last that long.
Right. Hot mic. Don't go to the bathroom.
So BioBrief Podcast 3.
Are we episode 3?
We're episode 3 right
this
now.
This is getting serious.
I'm surprised that we have some listeners. People have approached me saying they do listen to this.
No.
So we have that going for
multiple
us.
Multiple people. I figured we had.
Somebody asked us to wear cowboy hats.
What? We got rid of the video for a reason.
Yeah, but we're not in Texas.
That's right.
But I think in terms of a macro level update, you know, I think the story remains somewhat consistent of, you know, relatively slow market, not a lot of demand out there. But I think there are some precursors to think that the market is making a turn. I think we are typically 9 months behind the West Coast. Surprising to say, we're not actually that far behind Boston. But we're seeing some successful IPOs get done on the West Coast, some funding close on the West Coast. And I think that's going to trickle down here. And that firmly puts us in that Q3, Q4 next year category where we're probably going to be in a, I'm not going to say we're going to be in 2021, 2020, you know, a little bit before that kind of demand, which I don't think we'll ever get back there. But I think there will be a steady flow of funding coming in to companies that have multiple assets and technologies rather than just one, and then good C-suite and good data. So, you know, I think we're getting towards more normal. And I think for us on the real estate side, our process takes so long, so we can get engaged very early. So we're going to start, and I've already kind of seen those folks start to trickle in a little bit. So, and we're in conference season. So, you know, I think everybody's trying to get out there. Everybody's trying to get money still. So I think it's coming at a good time.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you're raising the idea of the season. So we're doing this the end of September 2023. And I think a lot of people are making big plans for 2024 on the hopes that everything that you just said is going to come true.
Yeah, I mean, we don't talk to much venture capital partners, but, you know, the ones that we do, I think it's true that they've been focused on their current portfolios, reinvesting money into people they've already invested in. There's time on the money that they have. And for biotech investment, this isn't an immediate return, especially on the therapeutic side. This is a 4 to 8 year horizon on getting money back in some instances. So there's a first tranche and then a second tranche typically in how these things get invested. And so there's time on this money. And yes, there's a lot of dry powder, and that dry powder needs to be dispersed because they're not going to give that money back. So, or maybe they will, and something crazy will happen. But what's interesting on the venture side, though, is I think we're getting pinged a lot from those that we know on the venture side, especially I think the smaller shops, and, you know, they're seeing some success and have seen success in groups like Flagship and some others in Boston that have more of a venture creative model. And, you know, especially in this tight funding market and wanting to keep a close eye on your investments, I think the folks that actually truly specialize in this space are kind of contemplating, what does this look like if we build out our own space and house companies and, you know, place these facilities near major university systems that we have good relationships with. And, you know, we can incubate these companies a little bit longer. Selfishly, we probably don't need to travel for board meetings. We can just, you know, walk into the conference room and they're there already. So I think it's interesting to see some folks engage us to get some pricing in the market from, you know, what would this look like? Do they follow through on it? I don't know. But I think that could be maybe a trend we're going to see over the next couple of years as groups kind of contemplate it and really follow through on it, especially where we can maybe push and get a beneficial build out price. And
Well, down markets provide a lot of opportunities. And so you gain market share, you gain market presence, maybe is a better way to look at it in a down market. And so you can apply that to just about any industry. But I think the interesting trends will be in venture capital as a creator, not just a passive investor, and how that plays out to your point. I also think, you know, it's interesting if you look at the VCs as even a passive player, who starts to invest first? Who takes the initiative and says, you know what, we've hit bottom. The valuations of these companies, of these technologies have now stabilized, or we can comp it to a point where we feel comfortable investing, and they strike first, and then everybody piles on behind it. And I think that will probably kind of grow over 2024, where you're gonna have a couple first movers and then everybody watches. And then you'll have a couple people behind that, and then everybody will kind of pile in after those first few people are successful or show the initial signs of success. And then big pharma behind that, I mean, we've seen big pharma in the market now really making some plays for expansion. They're one of the fastest growing groups just because they're flush with cash. And they're gonna play in that same world of acquisition rather than investment. They're gonna start acquiring these distressed assets through stuff that'll help their pipeline, stuff that's competitive with their pipeline, and so all of this I think is gonna come to fruition in 2024 is the hope. You know, we've been saying that for a long time. We'll see if it actually happens this year.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you know, you're right. I think the biggest shakeout's going to be this kind of existing companies, existing technology in the market. I think we're still going to see, in markets like Philadelphia and Boston and San Diego, San Francisco, these kind of best-in-class technologies that get pulled together and these new companies get formed. And those are going to be the big raises that we see in the market from a NewCo standpoint. You know, there's going to be that happening, but you're right, there's going to be this fire sale on existing technologies where these companies have been devalued and they've just been caught in this valley that unfortunately it's going to be kind of a claw and climb to get out of in some sense.
Yeah. So let's bring it back to real estate. I mean, I think all of this is really helpful to just show the trajectory of the industry, but how's it going to impact real estate? So if I was a company listening to this, I'd say, okay, well, I'm going through one or multiple of these scenarios right now in my strategic planning. How do I incorporate the real estate piece into my plan? You know, I think right now the market is really hungry for demand. And so we've said this. I mean, we talked about manufacturing on our last episode. We talked about the distress in the market from a landlord's perspective. I think there's definitely good lease terms to be had out there. There's potentially the cost to build out space is astronomical right now. So take advantage of second generation space, take advantage of spec built suites as much as you can, if possible. For the larger users, grabbing a sublease or taking a sublease to a direct lease has been the way to get larger blocks without having to put the money in to build from shell. I would say avoid that build out from shell if at all possible right now, just because of the time frame. You know, you don't have to do it anymore. A lot of our clients that signed in a very, very tight market because they had to move forward with plans. They didn't know, they didn't have the crystal ball. They had to say, okay, let's go forward with this. They're just delivering their space now in a market where we've seen distress for the past 6 months. And so, lessons learned there. You don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to build your space over a 12 or 15 month period. You can take advantage of some stuff in the market.
Yeah, I think you're right. But in comparison to other markets out there, are the markets that we operate in day to day, Maryland, Philadelphia, Delaware, Virginia at some level, all relatively healthy. Yes, there's space in the sublease market, but I think it's realistic to think that space is going to get gobbled up first. And by the time Q3, Q4 next year, I don't think there's going to be much existing space left in the market. Yeah. And I think that's where we're going to see some tenants look to build.
Yeah.
And again, if you just need your typical BSL2 wet lab, or you can, retrofit this to fit your needs at some level, I think, yes, take the existing space. But in the markets that we operate in, I don't know how long we'll have with those existing spaces. Will we get more space in the sublease market? Most definitely. There's going to be companies that unfortunately don't make it and don't receive the funding in time and need to look towards their real estate to continue their path forward in order to free up some capital. But you know, again, we're not Boston. We don't have 2 million plus square feet. Yes, they have a lot more companies, and that demand is probably going to bounce back a little bit quicker than us. But, you know, again, I think this space will adjust. I'm not going to say that this space is recession proof,
yeah.
But I'm going to say that diseases still need to be cured. Science still needs to be funded to do that. And, you know, through that, private companies still need to be formed and funded. So,
no, that's an interesting point. I mean, I think you're right. You look into the future and you're like, okay, well, how long will the supply of existing lab space actually last? And it's going faster than I think we predicted.
Well, look at Alexandria. They're already building spec suites again.
Yeah.
I think they already see the writing on the wall that, you know, yes, there's existing supply and competition in the market, but it's not going to last that long.
Right. Right.
One year, 2 years.
Look at it now from a landlord's perspective. So we just talked about tenants' perspective where it's, okay.
It's the only lens I had.
It's going to cost a ton of money to build this out. We haven't closed the gap between the tenant improvement allowance that the landlord provides and what it actually costs to build the space. That just hasn't closed as quickly as it needs to or should have maybe. And so if you can get $175 a foot out of a landlord, in tenant improvement allowance, you're still in for almost $350, $400 a foot to build out your space now. And so that's gone up by orders of magnitude since pre-COVID. And so now, you know, look at it from a landlord's perspective. How are you acting as first mover in the market? How do you compete in the market to grab that demand and make sure that you have you grab every requirement that's out there? And I think the way to do it is closing that gap, making it easier for people to, once you exhaust all the supply, now you're saying, okay, look, we're going to finance this for you.
Yeah. Rental rates are going to move, right?
I think they're going up.
Yeah, they need to. Interest rates, everything, you know, these landlords adhere to everything that we're seeing in the market, right? And at some level, they've dumped a bunch of money into either getting a building out of the ground or they have, you know, money on the building. It was underwritten at some level to some rental rate, right?
Yeah.
Where we're going to have success is for them to go back to their investors and potentially get more money to the table in terms of TIs. And I think, yes, it's $350, $400 to build, but hopefully, you know, the buildings that are going to go first are the ones that have some base building infrastructure.
Right.
They have some HVAC that our tenants can use. They have a generator. You know, we get rid of those big ticket items and get this closer to $250 per square foot. And therefore, the delta is going to be $50. Because I think we're going to get to $200. I don't think it's going to be realistic to think we're going to be above $200 in TIs in the Maryland market anytime
soon. I don't know how you get around it. The whole mid-Atlantic market, I don't know how you get around it. And if...
Well, just think about the landlord pool. Philadelphia, it's a relatively young biotech hub. Landlords are just getting used to 150, 175. And yeah, rental rates have skyrocketed. $75 asking rates right now in Philly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to maintain. It's all going to level out. That's a market where I think that, you know, rental rates could decrease a little bit. I think we're going to be probably level out in the mid-60s, high 60s. For some true trophy class product. And then you're gonna be in the mid 50s, high 50s for existing class A space.
Huh.
Because that market landlords are just testing and sending out proposals and just seeing where things land.
But money's not getting any cheaper, you know, to borrow. The cost of construction isn't going down. I think it has to increase and if you know pre-revenue life science company needs to finance everything they can, that's a viable alternative to spending your investors' cash on tenant improvements.
The dangers of the rising rental rates in Philadelphia, though, are, I mean, we've seen it. You know, you're trying to keep best in class technology spinning out of Penn, really the cell and gene therapy programs there, right? And the biggest selling point for Philadelphia as a market for those companies to stay in is a price point. You're trying to argue with your investors that Philadelphia is cheaper. I am closer to the university where I spun out of. It's a great talent pool. Talent's a little bit cheaper, but it's cheaper than San Diego, San Francisco. It's cheaper than Boston. Mm-hmm. As soon as rental rates get into some sort of comparable state, we're going to lose those companies to those other markets.
Wow.
Because investors are going to say, $10 delta doesn't make any sense. Come to me.
Great point.
So, you know, again, that's the biggest fear for Philadelphia. For Maryland, you know, unfortunately, I think there's some things percolating that, you know, are exciting. And, you know, if they work out, it's going to be great. But, you know, the biggest problem Maryland has, there's no local venture. And there's no champion from a university system that's saying, we're planting a flag, this is what we're doing, we're really growing the region. And, you know, there's leading scientists that, you know, are really passionate about growing companies in that region. I don't think we have that with Hopkins. I think Hopkins is getting better, and we're helping them do that and, you know, assisting them through the fast forward location and strategizing and making sure that companies have the space when they do want to spin out. And Wexford's building at 4MLK, I think, is exciting. But, you know, again, I think in comparison to the growth that we're seeing in Philadelphia, I think it's twofold.
Well, exciting stuff all around. I feel like our listeners are like, okay, what's next? What if you were a landlord right now in the market? I like this question. We asked it on the last one. If you were a landlord right now in the market and you wanted some advice, what would we say is the prospect of a resurgence in demand and, you know, get your building leased kind of thing? I think it's probably safe to say 2025.
20, my finger up.
Yeah. to all the listeners that don't have the video.
This feed. Is not a video.
We're wearing cowboy hats.
I think it depends on where you're talking about. I think the supply in Philadelphia is going to go quicker than the supply in Maryland. There's far greater supply in Maryland in terms of, again, Philadelphia is a relatively young market. I think that's going to get gobbled up quick. We're just seeing so much growth in that market from a newco standpoint. And that kind of goes back to my former comment of, we're going to see these new companies being formed, and, you know, somewhat people have learned from the past, and it's not going to be a one technology game. And we have this company under this one technology. It's going to be, we need to pull things together in order to justify a large investment and grow this thing. We're seeing that in Philadelphia. We're not really seeing that in Maryland. We're not seeing the 100, 50, 100. Even we saw one $75 million raise with Georgia Mutant, but we're seeing more of that in Philly than Maryland. So I think if you're a landlord in Philadelphia, I think the story is, if you've got a true building that you've already converted, I'd say yes, 2025 potentially, where you're going to have some signed leases and start, you know, seeing some of that get leased up. But Maryland, I don't know. I think, you know, that existing space from a sublease perspective needs to get taken. I think landlords like ARE are going to renew and expand tenants. So that's your biggest fear. They have developable land that they can still get out of the ground to continue to compete. So I don't know.
I'm cautiously optimistic on Maryland. I think we're going to see some big pharma plays. I think we're going to see, hopefully, Amgen come around and use the site that they got through acquisition of Horizon. I think there's reason for optimism in the next couple of years in Maryland. We just have to watch the market pretty closely.
Yeah, I think we're seeing it. The spec suites are starting to get leased, and we are getting active in this kind of exploratory phase for a lot of these spec suite deals. For companies looking to raise capital, you know, A rounds mostly, and, you know, finding their first lab in most instances. So I agree with you. I think, you know, on the flip side, let me flip it to you. The landlords that aren't building out spec suites aren't creating a base. You know, they're just sitting on either a ground of development or a conversion. They put some base building infrastructure in there, and they're just saying, we're going to wait for people to fit this out. I think those folks are going to have more trouble than those that are viewing this a little bit more strategically and taking the ARE model and saying, we're taking two floors and we're building these out spec, and then, you know, we'll leave the rest in shell condition. I think those folks that have a totally
agree with you.
Shell building.
Completely hard. Agree with you. Yeah, I agree. For all the reasons we talked about before, from the financing, the cost of construction, I mean, all the things that we keep harping on, I agree with
you. You're going to continue to lose out from those that are building them.
Yeah. Although, good luck getting financing for a project right now without a tenant signed, you know, a 80% full building.
people are doing
with
it.
Bulletproof credit. I think the financing environment right now is, and I'm not an expert at this at all, but I think the financing environment right now is such that if you don't have it in place, you better have a really, really compelling story with a lease signed behind it so that you can actually get that done. And you know, that's something to be wary of from a tenant standpoint, is if you have a project that isn't fully financed yet and they're waiting on that lease to get signed, now you've really got, you need to find ways to protect yourself there, because if you sign a lease and then they can't get it financed, what happens there? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that could go sideways moving forward with this market.
That's an interesting thought. You know, on the tenant side, especially when you're negotiating larger deals, you almost need to underwrite the landlord at some level. Know who you're operating against and negotiating against, because there are real fears.
I mean, there's some of these guys that are so big, they could do it on balance sheet, but most of them are going to require some kind of financing to get it going. And if it's contingent on your lease, I mean, I know what it takes to close on a lot of those loans. It's not a fast process, and nothing is certain until it's actually signed. So, yeah, interesting stuff. So this is a good market dump. We didn't have a great topic today, but we figured it out. We kind of made our way.
I think we did a great job.
We appreciate you, listener.
The three that we have.
Yeah. What do we have, two listeners?
I don't know, man.
We appreciate both of you guys.
Yeah. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yeah. So BioBriefs, episode 3 in the bag. We appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back with more soon.